You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the complex world of enterprise identity, securing legacy web apps at scale can be daunting. Strata Identity makes it simple. With Strata, you can effortlessly integrate non-standard apps with any identity service, like MFA or SSO, with zero coding and zero hassle. Designed by identity architects for identity architects, Strata works with every vendor, standard, and app architecture. This means your apps can now speak modern protocols and integrate seamlessly with your chosen identity services. From securing on-prem web apps to migrating away from outdated identity providers or consolidating them, Strata helps you keep your complex access policies as you modernize your identity infrastructure and get rid of technical debt. Join leading organizations like 3M, Dallas County, and CIBC in securing your apps with Strata. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your identity security priorities, and receive a complimentary pair of AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Connect today at strata.io/cyberwire.
The report of Chinese supply chain seeding attacks comes in for more skepticism. NSA never heard of it, then Congress would like some answers. The U.S. has an officer of Chinese MSS in front of a Cincinnati court on charges of industrial espionage. He was extradited this week from Belgium. We've got notes on officers and agents. And Russia repeats denials of hacking the Organization for the Prevention of Chemical Warfare. From the CyberWire studios at DataTribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Thursday, October 11th, 2018. Bloomberg's report of a large-scale Chinese seeding attack on the hardware supply chain has yet to find much corroboration. As we noted yesterday, Bloomberg itself cited a Maryland security firm, Sepio Systems, willing to say that it had found the Chinese spy chips in some Supermicro motherboards used in one of its clients' servers. But it can't say where it found them because of non-disclosure agreements with that company. It can only say that it was a telecommunications company. To review, Apple, Amazon, and Supermicro, the three companies named in the original story, have all categorically denied that the hardware they used, or in the case of Supermicro produced, was compromised by an illicitly installed chip. Both Britain's GCHQ and the U.S. Department of Homeland Security say they have no reason to doubt those denials, and DHS has also said it's not conducting any investigation into the alleged seeding attack on the supply chain. NSA's Rob Joyce, the agency's senior advisor for cybersecurity strategy, is the latest official to cast doubt on the report. At an event in Washington yesterday organized by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and Real Clear Politics, Joyce said, quote, "There's no there," end quote. That is, he hasn't seen any evidence that the supply chain attack took place. He pointed out the denials by Apple, Amazon, and others should count for something, since their directness and specificity would expose the companies to considerable legal risk if the denials were untrue. As he said in response to a question from the Wall Street Journal, quote, "What I can't find are any ties to the claims in the article. We're befuddled. If someone has first-degree knowledge, can hand us a board and point to somebody in a company that was involved in this as claimed, we want to talk to them," end quote. so it appears NSA doesn't see the malicious chip either. Congress is pushing its own investigation. Apple has already sent the Senate a letter, and Senators Marco Rubio, a Republican from Florida, and Richard Blumenthal, a Democrat from Connecticut, have asked Supermicro to reply to a series of questions about the alleged incident. Senator John Thune, a Republican of South Dakota, requested staff briefings from Apple, Amazon, and Supermicro by Friday. In the House, Oversight Committee Chair Representative Trey Gowdy, Republican of South Carolina, and Intelligence Committee Chair Devin Nunes, Republican of California, have asked for classified briefings on the matter from the FBI, DHS, and the Director of National Intelligence. They want those briefings by October 22nd. More will therefore probably come to light over the next 2 weeks, but for now at least, the best most other parties can say about the Bloomberg story is that it's not proven. Others are harsher. Security firm Malwarebytes calls it the Bloomberg blunder. Google security researcher Tavis Ormandy tweeted his skepticism by saying that this is starting to feel like chemtrail territory. And two experts quoted in the story, Joe Grand of Grand Idea Studio and Joe Fitzpatrick of Hardware Security Resources, both say their statements were taken out of context and don't in fact support the reporter's conclusions. So at best, not proven, and increasingly looking as if the story won't be. Bloomberg continues to stand by its reporting. Security firm Varonis recently surveyed both IT and C-suite professionals to gauge their perceptions on data breach prevention. Brian Vecci is technical evangelist at Varonis, and he joins us with what they found.
91% of IT and cybersecurity pros believe that their organization is making progress when it comes to cybersecurity, while the C-suite was less positive. Only 69% agreed with the same thing. More than half of C-suite respondents and about half of IT and cyber pros identified data loss as their number one priority, number one concern, I should say, followed by data theft. But what they thought was the third priority differed a little bit. Cybersecurity pros and IT pros are really worried about ransomware, which has been one of the biggest scourges recently. And C-suite executives are more worried about data alteration, which I think is pretty interesting.
What do you think is the source of that little disconnect there between the IT pros thinking that they're making progress and the C-suite maybe not thinking they're as far along?
I think that's probably the most interesting thing that's come out of this survey is that kind of discrepancy between IT and security pros thinking, hey, we're making big investments in technology and cybersecurity, and we're making some pretty big progress with regards to our security posture. C-suite executives don't seem to share that same view. And I think it comes from how we measure the ROI, the return on investment for security spending. And it also comes with how we measure or tend not to measure the risk associated with data loss and data theft. For C-suite executives, one of the sense that we get from this survey is that security is kind of a binary situation. You've either been breached or not. And what was interesting is that the C-suite executives believe that the biggest issue with cybersecurity is recovery costs. You know, if you get breached, how expensive is it going to be to clean things up? Whereas IT and cybersecurity pros are more concerned with reputational and brand damage. How is this going to affect our business? In some cases, is this going to, you know, mean the end of the business completely? And I found that really, really interesting. It's the IT pros that realize these security issues have really deep connections with how the business is run, while C-suite executives think, well, we really just have to worry about the recovery costs. And I think that's because cybersecurity pros and the security community in general hasn't yet done a really good job of showing business leaders the measurable risk and risk reduction of security investments and what security actually means for their business.
So how do you suppose the cyber pros go about bridging that gap?
I think it's kind of a messaging issue. It's cyber pros have to do a better job of explaining to business leaders and showing them not only the scale of the problem, but exactly how investments in cybersecurity can make a measurable difference in their business. I spent some time recently with a group of CIOs, and we had a really interesting conversation about this that was based on investments related to the GDPR, which, as I'm sure you know, is the EU General Data Protection Regulation. Mm-hmm. And this group of CIOs is in the United States. And they were kind of split on whether they had a real mandate to make big changes to their organizations from a technology perspective because of a law that may or may not affect them. And one of the things that came out as part of that discussion was, you know, there are going to be real costs with putting the kinds of controls in place to keep data private that the GDPR mandates. And should we do this now, even if maybe as an organization we're not subject to these kinds of controls, or should we wait until, for instance, the California Consumer Privacy Act goes into effect and we have a real mandate to do it? Some CIOs and some business leaders are thinking that way, but others are realizing that, you know, putting the kind of controls that the GDPR says you need to have when it comes to data, which is really just treating personal information as something that's kind of valuable and not something that you can just throw in a junk drawer and not worry about, which is how many organizations have treated data in the past, can give them a competitive advantage. Because who wants to do business as a consumer or as a business partner with an organization that doesn't take data privacy and security seriously? But how we measure the effect of those investments and how we measure the risk of not doing anything, just to boil things down to their simplest forms, is something that IT and cybersecurity pros haven't been great at. And it shows up in the results of these surveys, where the C-suite executives don't see the same kinds of results that IT and cybersecurity pros see when it comes to security investment.
That's Brian Vecci from Varonis. You can find the results from their data breach prevention survey on their website. In the first incident of its kind, an officer of the Chinese Intelligence Service, the Ministry of State Security, MSS, is in U.S. custody facing hacking charges. Yanjun Zhu, a deputy division director in MSS's Jiangsu State Security Department, 6th Bureau, was apprehended by Belgian authorities in April and extradited to the U.S. on Tuesday. The Department of Justice says he'll be tried for conspiring and attempting to commit economic espionage and steal trade secrets from multiple U.S. aviation and aerospace companies. It's an industrial espionage beef, and it will be tried in Cincinnati, near where the alleged attempted theft of trade secrets from GE Aviation occurred. Zhu used traditional espionage approaches as opposed to more 21st century cyber attacks. He would attempt to recruit U.S. agents by offering them, for example, invitations to academic conferences at Jiangsu, and then work on them to deliver the information the MSS was after. He himself was apprehended using traditional counter-espionage approaches. U.S. officers lured him to Belgium, where Belgium authorities arrested him on the U.S. warrant. The Washington Post reports that Zhu's case is linked to that of Zhi Shaqun, a Chinese citizen living in Chicago. China's reaction has been relatively moderate. The Post reports that the foreign ministry said the indictment was made of thin air, but that they expect the U.S. to deal with Zhu fairly in accordance with law, respecting his legitimate rights and interests. Some observers suggest that the arrest, trial, and extradition of a Chinese intelligence officer will prompt strong Chinese retaliation in cyberspace, and perhaps it already has. U.S. officials this week have been naming China as the principal cyber threat, worse than Russia, which itself is pretty bad. A quick note as we follow these stories on the difference between an officer and an agent. An officer is someone who works for an intelligence service as a regular employee. An agent is someone that an officer might recruit to spy for that service. Thus, Aldrich Ames, currently serving life for espionage in a U.S. federal prison, was an American officer. He was employed by the CIA, but a Russian agent. He spied for the KGB and its successor agencies. Zhu is an MSS officer. Threat intelligence firm Recorded Future contrasts the Russian and Chinese hacking communities, respectively, thieves and geeks. This is from its analysis of their online hacking communities. Part of the difference lies in China's relatively greater separation from the two countries' mostly Western targets. There's not only the barrier of the Great Firewall, but also the separation imposed by quite different language families. And of course, there are cultural issues as well. Russia makes use of traditional criminals to serve the state as they enrich themselves. China uses its security services to help enrich the state. And finally, TASS is authorized to declare that Russia strongly denies having hacked the Organization for the Prevention of Chemical Warfare. They were framed, Moscow says, by Dutch security services, probably in cahoots with their Anglo-American masters. We await further clarity about the GRU hackers and Novichok specialists and their interests in Stonehenge, tulips, windmills, and canals.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI.
And joining me once again is Ben Yellen. He's a senior law and policy analyst at the University of Maryland Center for Health and Homeland Security. Ben, it's good to have you back. We have been going through a couple of interesting cases that came through Florida recently, and there was one that had to do with cell site location information. Bring us up to date. What's going on here?
Sure. So this is another Court of Appeals decision from the state court in Florida. And it was actually a cell site location information case dating back to 2001, the early days of cellular telephones, or maybe the middle ages of cellular telephones. And what happened is the government was able to use cell site location information to locate a person charged with first-degree murder. That person was convicted largely based on the evidence gained through that cell site location information. Then this year, we had a Supreme Court decision in Carpenter v. United States, which informed us that the government needs a warrant to obtain cell site location information. Now, usually this is not a problem for law enforcement. There's this thing in the legal world, in the Fourth Amendment world, called the good faith exception. Hmm. And if the government is relying on clear rules that are in place at the time, the conviction will stand even if those rules are subsequently changed by the Supreme Court. Mm. So if something was legal in 2001 and the Supreme Court suddenly decides it's illegal in 2018, traditionally, that means a conviction can't be overturned. The law enforcement was working with the tools that they had been given. That is actually not the case here, because in this case, there was no legal doctrine at all in this area of the law. There was no decision saying that a warrant is not required for cell site location information. And in the absence of any sort of guidance, the good faith exception can't apply. So this person is going to be granted a new trial, and the state will have to use evidence that wasn't gleaned from the historical cell site location information.
So a retroactive decision, a decade and a half or so back?
Yeah, it's probably very devastating for the prosecutors and for the attorney general of the state of Florida. But, you know, this is what happens when the Supreme Court decides that we have a reasonable expectation of privacy and information gleaned from a certain type of technology, then the end result is going to be that some undesirable people who have committed heinous crimes are either going to be set free or going to get their day in court. And, you know, traditionally the good faith exception allows us to avoid these types of situations. But since there was no prevailing law on the question of warrants for cell site location information, the state is really out of luck here.
Hmm. All right. Well, it's fascinating to track along with it. Ben Yellen, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. And for professionals and cybersecurity leaders who want to stay abreast of this rapidly evolving field, sign up for CyberWire Pro. It'll save you time and keep you informed. Listen for us on your Alexa smart speaker, too. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Peru Prakash, Stefan Vaziri, Kelsey Bond, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow. And now a word from our sponsor, SpyCloud, the leader in operationalizing cybercrime analytics. Traditional threat intelligence is a thing of the past. Cyber criminals are stealing vast amounts of credentials, session cookies, and financial data every day, and it's hard to keep up. SpyCloud is the trusted partner businesses turn to fully understand their darknet exposure risk and neutralize threats before it's too late. SpyCloud alerts your organization as soon as an employee or customer's data appears on the dark net, so you can act faster than bad actors to prevent cyber attacks like ransomware, session hijacking, account takeover, and online fraud. With insights from the industry's largest repository of recaptured data, protect the digital identities and systems most important to your business. Get your free corporate darknet exposure report at spycloud.com/cyberwire and see what information criminals have in their hands today. That's spycloud.com/cyberwire.